Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. The largest price increases in Poland's post-war history came into force there this morning after a weekend that saw new disturbances in the Baltic coast port city of Gdansk. Bert Quint in Warsaw brings us up to date.
Troops and police in Warsaw have been more in evidence in recent days than they had for several weeks, an indication of the regime's concern that price hikes that went into effect today might spark riots. In the official version of what happened in Gdansk Saturday, when six civilians and eight policemen reportedly were injured in a clash, there is no mention of the increases as a cause. The rioting is blamed on American propaganda initiatives. But the martial law authorities know their history. They know that when much milder food price rises were proposed in 1970, there were riots in Gdansk and elsewhere, many deaths, and the fall of a regime. In 1976, another proposed price increase, more riots. And the strikes of 1980 that changed Polish history followed an attempt to raise the price of meat. Now, under martial law, widespread rioting is less likely, but people did grumble, and there was reason. Sugar up 400%, butter more than 300%, meat, some cuts, nearly six times as expensive as before, fish more than three times the old price. Heating fuels and electricity have doubled in cost. This was strong economic medicine, but the Polish economy is desperately ill. Bert Quint, CBS News, Warsaw.
Let Poland be Poland. That's the title of a 90-minute television broadcast produced by the U.S. International Communications Agency and beamed yesterday around the world. In Europe, as we hear from Doug Tunnell, the response was not enthusiastic.
London's Daily Mail called it tinseled rhetoric. The Times said it was simply dull. And Britain's BBC has yet to decide how much of Let Poland Be Poland will be broadcast here. Only in Spain, Luxembourg, and Bavaria have viewers had the chance to see it all so far. Even though most of Western Europe's most prominent leaders were members of the cast, the majority of Europe's television stations have so far shown only short segments of the 90-minute program. In West Germany, for example, both government-operated stations broadcast only the serious parts of the show last night, followed by commentary on the show and the situation in Poland. About 13 million East Germans could have watched the West German broadcasts uncensored. Why the mixed reviews in Europe? The program's mixture of showbiz with serious diplomacy is perceived by many here as an odd one at best. But behind the misgivings about casting actors alongside world leaders, many Europeans fear Let Poland Be Poland may mark a dramatic escalation in the propaganda war between East and West. Doug Tunnell, CBS News, London.
This is David Andelman in Moscow. The Soviet leadership pulled out all stops for its propaganda barrage against Let Poland Be Poland. Commentaries on state radio and television and in the government media, branding the broadcast slanderous, anti-Polish, and anti-Soviet. The Soviet news agency TASS called President Reagan the director of the program and called it a complete flop as well. At the same time, Moscow radio and television presented their own documentaries in support of Poland's martial law regime, broadcasts that opened with the music of Chopin and led into interviews with loyal Polish workers. The Soviet barrage dragged in everything from the war in Vietnam to American support for the governments of Chile, El Salvador, the Dominican Republic, South Korea, and South Africa. The implication? What can you expect from an administration in Washington that supports all such forces of evil? David Andelman, CBS News, Moscow.
Demonstrations in support of the Polish people were held over the weekend in more than 20 cities around the United States. The largest took place in Chicago, where 10,000 were addressed by Secretary of State Alexander Haig. He blamed the martial law crackdown in Poland on the Soviet Union. The mounting tragedy of El Salvador is being emphasized today in Washington, where a Senate subcommittee is taking testimony from Assistant Secretary of State Thomas Enders, and in San Salvador, where a government search for guerrillas has led to more deaths and bloodshed. Charles Krauss reports from the Salvadoran capital.
The military operation that left at least 19 civilians dead this weekend couldn't have come at a worse time for El Salvador's government or a better time for the country's guerrillas. Congress will hold hearings today and tomorrow on the human rights situation in El Salvador, specifically the government's respect for human rights, which is a condition for continued U.S. aid. The hearings come at a time when the Reagan administration has reportedly decided to request a $300 million increase in economic and military aid to El Salvador over the next 2 years. Critics of the administration's unstinting support for El Salvador's junta will undoubtedly point to the weekend's death toll as evidence that the human rights situation here has not improved. They will question the president's certification last week that it has. Charles Krauss, CBS News, San Salvador.
President Reagan today presses on with his new federalism plan, under which the federal government would assume full responsibility for Medicaid while transferring more than 40 social welfare programs to the states. Nelson Benton has details at the White House.
A bipartisan group of governors is to meet through the morning with White House officials and later with the president. The governors of Vermont, Utah, Illinois, Iowa, Georgia, and Tennessee. The new federalism meeting is also to include the Republican leaders in Congress and other selected Republican members, no Democrats included. White House officials say they think the new federalism plan has a good chance in Congress. Critics contend that even though federal funds from federal tax revenues would be transferred also, many states would not apply them fully to the social programs Mr. Reagan wants them to take over. Nelson Benton, CBS News, the White House.
The Senate Governmental Affairs Committee opens hearings on the new federalism plan later this week. Majority Leader Howard Baker contends that the plan could be enacted this year. Democratic leaders of the House disagree. Representative Thomas Foley, the House Democratic whip, says, quote, "It's unwise to rush into such basic reorganizations. If it's not supported by local officials, it won't fly in Congress. And Congress," says Foley, "is not going to preside over a shotgun marriage." More details are coming to light in Italy about the circumstances that led to the rescue of General James Dozier. John Ferrugia has the latest in Verona.
CBS News has been told that information provided by a young member of the Red Brigade was instrumental in securing General Dozier's release. A source close to police investigators says a wiretap placed on a phone of a major drug dealer in Verona led police to a young drug addict whom they suspected of being a member of the Red Brigade. In return for immunity from prosecution, he directed police to the suburban area of Padua where the general was being held. Sources say he did not know the address of the building, only that the circled letter A, painted in red, appeared on its wall. This is the symbol of a violent left-wing Italian workers' movement. Police searched 2 days before finding the building. There are two symbols, one on either end of the apartment where Dozier was being held. Italian authorities have refused to confirm any information about the general's release, but American sources have told CBS News that the key source of information in finding Dozier came from a drug addict, and the location of the Red Brigade's hideout was tracked through a drug bust. John Ferrugia, CBS News, Verona, Italy.
Turkey's former Prime Minister Bülent Ecevit was released from jail in Ankara today after serving 2 months of a 3-month sentence imposed by a military court for violating a ban on political comment. If there's anything the Middle West doesn't need right now, it's more snow. The folks there already have more snow than they can handle, as we hear from Meredith Vieira in Chicago.
No doubt children in St. Louis are waking up this morning with smiles on their faces because for them there is no school today. Their parents have been asked to stay home as well. Last night, the mayor declared a state of emergency. For all practical purposes, St. Louis has shut down, buried under 20 inches of snow. If it's miserable in Missouri today, it's not much better in Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, or Illinois. Driving in much of the Midwest is like driving on grease. Many roads are closed. With drifts of up to 6 feet to contend with, snowplows are useless. Yesterday's storm marked the end of January, and folks here are glad to see it go. They've had enough of waking up to fresh snow on their doorstep. As one woman in Indianapolis put it, the thrill is gone. Meredith Vieira, CBS News, Chicago.
But more snow is on the way. Another winter storm roaring out of the Rockies heading for the Midwest. Sally Stanford, one of California's best-known personalities, died today in Marin County General Hospital at the age of 78. Miss Stanford, whose real name was Marcia Owens, was a San Francisco madam before going into politics in Sausalito, where she served as a city councilwoman, then as mayor and vice mayor before retiring. Gold prices faltered overseas today. The price was fixed in London at $381.25 an ounce, down more than five. The dollar is strong today against all of the major overseas currencies.
CBS News. The administration says the decisive battle for Central America is underway in El Salvador, and it is sending more military equipment immediately. I'm Richard C. Hottolett, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Thomas Enders, Assistant Secretary of State for Latin America, was on Capitol Hill this morning before a Senate subcommittee to justify additional aid to the government of El Salvador. Enders painted the administration's decision in terms of an emergency. The decisive battle for Central America is underway in El Salvador, he said. If, after Nicaragua, El Salvador is captured by a violent minority, who in Central America would not live in fear? And Enders went on, how long would it be before major strategic U.S. interests, the Panama Canal, sea lanes, oil supplies, were at risk? Unquote. Enders told the senators the administration is planning to send El Salvador $55 million worth of military equipment immediately. Some of it would be to replace aircraft lost in last week's guerrilla attack on the Salvadoran government's largest air base. Enders accused Nicaragua and Cuba of spreading subversion throughout Central America. Cuba's potential expanded by the recent arrival of a second squadron of Soviet MiGs and some 60,000 tons of war supplies shipped to Cuba by the Soviet Union last year. The United States is already scheduled to provide $25 million worth of military assistance and $110 million in economic aid to El Salvador this year, and Enders explained the need for continued U.S. help.
If the United States were to terminate aid now, the existing government and army would, of course, fight on. But the fact that having supported them under two administrations in their struggle and having supported the reforms that they have been proposing, the fact that we repudiated them would obviously be a massive blow to them. There would be very probably a substantial period of great bloodshed in El Salvador, followed quite probably by a victory of the insurgent forces, particularly given the continuing support from Nicaragua.
More news after this.
The Bell System presents Miss Ella Fitzgerald.
Talk to the children.
Much of the Midwest is struggling to dig out from yet another big winter storm. In St. Louis, the snow is described as the worst in 70 years, with 19 inches falling yesterday alone. Schools and businesses were closed, and the downtown area was hushed during a non-existent rush hour. Indiana was also hard hit, as were parts of Illinois, where Earl Jones, director of the state's Disaster and Emergency Services Office, describes some problems people are facing.
We did have a great deal of difficulty at the outset finding adequate numbers of blankets and cots. So we finally came up with a realization that really what these people needed was a warm, comfortable place. And if we couldn't get cots and blankets, at least they were safe in the shelters, the many churches and the Salvation Army and Red Cross shelters that we opened throughout the state.
Stocks and other news after this.
Welcome to Meet the Media.
Thank you very much. Today I am interviewing radio.
Hello.
Television.
Take a look at this.
Oh, newspaper.
I've been around the longest.
Yeah, but you can't change channels on a newspaper.
Well, you can't put a TV in the bottom of a birdcage.
Radio.
Mm-hmm.
How is your listenership?
It's up 66% since 1967.
Newspaper?
Yes.
How's your circulation?
It's,
Right.
But I'm happy to say our advertising rates have gone up.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Radio?
Because the cost of radio advertising has not increased as much as the other major media, it's a better deal.
And what about the cost of television?
Film at 11.
Radio in that round.
Mm-hmm.
What about creativity?
Well, there are four of us sitting in a room pretending to be a radio, a television, a newspaper, and a human being.
That's amusing.
Just an example of radio's creativity.
Radio, red hot, because it works. For the advertiser trying to fight the rising costs of TV and print, the Radio Advertising Bureau can send you more facts. This station can send you more customers.
A government commission in South Africa says journalism should be professionalized along the lines of medicine and law to promote accuracy and objectivity. The commission called the quality of the media poor and said a council should be created to set standards, give entrance exams, and impose disciplinary measures when necessary. The commission says the plan is not aimed at curbing press freedom. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones average down 9.51. Volume on the big board, nearly 22 million shares. The Dow Jones Industrials stand at 861.59. Richard C. Hottle at CBS News.